We are in the book of Genesis, and we have been making our way through through the early life of Jacob. Last couple of weeks, we've been spending some time talking about his children. Of course, Jacob had 12 sons, and we went through those and talked about them. One thing I did want to correct, and I appreciate Miss Regina had mentioned this to me, was I think I'd mentioned that Rachel, Benjamin was born after after Joseph had been sold into slavery. There's a little bit of discussion about that. If the biblical timeline is laid out in a timeline, then he definitely was born prior to Joseph being sold into slavery. There's some debate of whether that's an exact timeline or not. So either way, I want to correct that. So we don't know for sure. It seems as though Benjamin was born prior to Joseph being sold into slavery. So I want to make sure I cleared that up, as clear as I can make it. So a little bit of discussion about it. I guess I'd probably lean toward he was born prior to Joseph being sold into slavery. So Benjamin, yes, definitely. He was the last, he was the last child. So he was child number 12. It's just a matter of when he was born. Was it prior? And I probably, after looking at it a little more deeply, he was probably born about anywhere from 5 to 12 years, 7 to 12 years before Joseph was sold into slavery. So when Joseph was sold into slavery, he was 17. We know that definitely. And so that would have put Benjamin anywhere from, 5 to, Joseph would have been 5 to 10 years old, when Benjamin was born, it seems to be. And so when Joseph was sold into slavery at 17, that would have put Benjamin somewhere from 7 to 12 years old. So, question about that.
Rachel, his mother.
Joseph and Benjamin's mother.
Right.
Yeah.
She died.
Yes.
Before Joseph.
No. Well, so, yes. So that's the question. That's the key question. That's where the debate is. When did she die? She definitely died at the birth of Benjamin, right? So we know that. It's putting it at what period? Was it prior to Joseph being sold into slavery, or was it after? I lean to that it happened prior to him being sold into slavery. But I'm just telling you that there is some debate about it. And so there's some debate. But I probably lean in my thinking toward she died prior to his being sold into slavery. Well, so we'll talk more about that when we get there, but let's hold that particular discussion until we get to that. That's near the end of Genesis. But it does change that discussion depending on how you view that. Now, I'm going to tell you, there are some people who view it as Benjamin was born after he was sold into slavery. There are some people who really believe that. So that's just my only point. I probably don't think that way. If I get evidence, I'm willing to reconsider my opinion on that, definitely.
That doesn't affect our salvation.
No, but I think these are still good questions to ask, and we should be willing to ask them. Yeah. Any other questions about it? All right, so I just wanted to bring that up. I wanted to clarify that particular point. All right, so let's go back. So in chapter 30, the first part of the chapter is dealing with the children. Now, the last child born, and this is where the discussion comes from, is Joseph in that list. Now, Benjamin comes later. We'll get to that in a little while. Let's go down to verse 25, and I'm going to summarize some of this, and then we'll read some of the text. But I do want to start with verse 25. So how long has Jacob been in service to Laban? How many years at this point, when you get to verse 25? 14 at this point. Remember, he did 7 years for Leah, and then he married Rachel and served another 7 years. Now notice as he comes to verse 25. As soon as Rachel had born Joseph, as soon as she born Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I served you, that I may go. For you know that the service I have given you." So basically, what is Jacob saying? I put my time in. I'm done. It's time for me to go home. However, how does Laban feel about it? Verse 27, "But Laban said to him, 'If I have found favor in your sight, I have learned,'" notice this, "'by divination,'" we'll come back to that, "'that the Lord has blessed me because of you.'" All right, before we go on to the next part, so Laban, this is a crucial moment for him. Why? Well, the guy who brought him his wealth, right? He's not at this point. I mean, when Jacob got to Laban, Laban was not the most wealthy guy. But because of the years of service of Jacob, and I'm going to call him Joseph, and y'all just call me out and say, I don't know why I'm getting those names twisted in my brain, but Jacob, when he came there, Laban was not as wealthy as he is now. But through Jacob's service, that wealth has grown, and Laban has taken note of it. I think it's kind of interesting. And this kind of shows, I think, Laban and the people of that area, how idolatrous they were. Notice what he says. "By divination." Now, I use the word divination. What's intended by that term? Okay, so it's something God is averse to, right? Number one, that's good. What else? When you think of divination, what do you think about? Dark arts. You might think about something like Harry Potter, right? The kind of magic, sorcery kind of stuff. That's what it was. It was it's a term that denotes sorcery. Now, I actually think Laban understands he did not discern this by divination. How do you think he discerned that the Lord was blessing Jacob?
Well, he saw it.
Common sense, right? He saw it. He knew where he was, and he knows where he is. And the factor that changed where he was to where he is what? Jacob. And Yahweh, again, notice the term Lord there, all caps, that's Yahweh, the name of God. The reason I'm pointing that out, and I keep doing that, is when you see idolatrous people use the name Yahweh or Lord, how are they thinking about God?
He's one of them.
One of many, right? And so Yahweh, for the rest of the world, was denoted as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so he is by no means a follower of God, but he at least has become attuned to who God is by his experiences. Notice his experiences. He had first had what? Abraham's servant, right? And how he came there to find Rebekah, Laban's sister. And now he's had a much more extensive experience with Jacob. And so he says, "I learned this by divination." No, he didn't. He learned it because God revealed it in what he did for Jacob. So I'm going to point that out as we go. You see the elements of the idolatrous culture in their language and in their behavior. And so he knows God's blessed him. Now verse 28. And so he says, "Name your wage and I will give it." Now whenever Laban makes a deal, a proposal for a deal, you better be attuned to his exact wording. And he might still change it as Jacob will say to us later, and we'll see it. And so he says, name your wage. Okay, so Jacob said to him, you yourself know that how I have served you and how your livestock has fared with me. All right, so that's the history. For you had little before I came. Notice that. And Jacob, now, is Jacob maybe suppressing a little bit about how much wealth he had? I don't know. But at least for me, they are having a what right now? You go into your boss, and you're looking for a salary increase. You're in the midst of negotiations. They are negotiating. And these are two very skilled, deceptive negotiators. And so he says, you know how little you had, inferring what? You got a lot right now. Okay? I'm valuable to you. Don't you want your employer to think you're valuable? Mm-hmm. Who in here doesn't want their employer to think they're valuable? Do you? Now, everybody wants their employer to appreciate them, right? And all the hard work they do. And so, so he says, you had little. Lost my place. Let me find it here. Verse 30. And it has increased abundantly. I'll probably get in trouble with this, but he's got a little bit of Donald Trump in him, right? I think he could have put the word hugely or bigly there, right? So he says abundantly. He says abundantly. And the Lord has, but now I do really appreciate what he says next, because Jacob could have turned around and said, see what all I have done for you. That's not what he said, though. He said, and the Lord has blessed you. He didn't say, I blessed you wherever I turned. So essentially, what is Jacob saying? Yeah, God is blessing you through me, right? Because God is caring for me, he's caring for you. And so Laban has a real asset for his wealth in Jacob. But then Jacob says, but now when shall I provide for my own household? He served 14 years. When does he begin to make money for himself? It's like if you're young and you started a company, and you really want to demonstrate your worth, you might work for a while for a wage that you really deserve better, but you're willing to take it to get in the door, right? To get experience, to show your worth. And you might work for a lower salary for a while, but that only works for so long, doesn't it? Eventually, you want them to appreciate your worth. And so what you're hoping to do early on is to build a foundation of, see, look how hard I'm working. In this situation, he says, see how much God has blessed me. Blessed you through me. Now it's time for me to receive some blessings from all of this, or to bless my household. And so Laban says, I said I'm going to read all this, but I'm sorry, it's a good conversation. What shall I give you? Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. Notice that. You shall not. I'm not looking for anything from you. There may be a little bit of tricky language there. But ultimately, Jacob understands that God's the one going to be blessing. And he's going to demonstrate that. If you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. Let me pass through all the flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep and every black lamb and the spotted and speckled among the goats. They shall be my wages. So he says, this is the deal I'm going to make. I'm going to leave you the white sheep, and I'm going to take all the so-called defective sheep and goats. Now, typically, sheep came in what was the color of their not fur is the right word, but what am I looking for? Coat, wool, right? It's white. You don't often have discoloration, but when you do have discoloration, how is that sheep evaluated? Is it more valuable? No, it's not. Not for the one who owns the sheep. They want their wool white and clean. And so he says, I'm going to take the ones that you don't really want anyway, and those will be my wages. Now, for goats, what are goats typically? They're usually black, at the time at least, black or dark colored. Right, that's a normal, healthy, more highly prized goat. However, you look at the colors he's looking for. Now, notice this pattern, because it's important later on. So, what would be the wages of Jacob? Among the sheep, what are the wages? Speckled, spotted, or black, right? Those are the three sheep. No, spotted, speckled, black, right? Those belong to him. All right, among the goats, what is it? Spotted or speckled? It's where their coat isn't completely the same color. You have some variation. So that's going to be my ways. Now, typically, those sheep would be very rare. Most of your sheep, most of your goats are white sheep and black or dark colored goats. That's just the way they're produced. So, from Laban's standpoint, is this a good deal for him? What seemingly on the outside Jacob's asking for is not very much. And so he says, I'll go through, we'll start fresh. This is the way I think that this is a little difficult reading. So, but I think what Jacob is saying is, we'll go through, we'll take out all the discolored ones from the flock, right? And we're going to start fresh. So it's from here on are the ones I'm getting. Does that make sense? So he's not going in and going starting now with whatever's out there, right? He's like, what now?
That's what Jacob's thinking.
Yeah, so Jacob's plan is to just go through, we'll separate them out, I'll put them somewhere else. Those are yours, but from this point forward, any spotted, speckled, black sheep, or any discolored goats will be mine. From here on out, those are my wages. However, Laban doesn't trust him. And so what does he do? Oh, genetics. Let's talk science for just a second. Why is that important that he removes them prior to starting their payment period?
There's probably a recessive gene so that there won't be any. And then if there's none to start with, it's really going to make it harder.
Yeah. So they didn't understand all about genetics from a what is that old? Yeah, but they understood animal husbandry, but they didn't understand how to do that. What's the cube thing where you do the AAB? What is it? Punnett square? Yeah, they didn't understand Punnett squares at the time. But they understood husbandry, and they understood breeding. And so let's take all the quote-unquote defective ones now, and so whatever comes forward seemingly must be what? Blessings from God. And so what you have, I'm just going to summarize this, but basically Laban goes in the middle of the night. He doesn't trust Jacob to do that, so he gets them out. But either way, you're starting with white lambs, black, dark goats. So all of the ones that was a part of the deal have been removed out. It doesn't say he didn't trust him, but I'm just assuming that. I think it's a pretty good assumption. The fact he did it when Jacob said, I'll do it. But if there's another reason, I mean, maybe there is some other reason. But that's my assumption on what's going on. because Jacob doesn't have the best history with being deceptive.
Nor does
Laban. They know the tricksters know tricksters, right? It's the innocent people that get harmed.
Also, Laban put his sons in charge of the quote unquote defective ones too. So he was like, "No, we're going to go ahead and completely."
And so that's where they ultimately went to. All the ones that were in the flock now went to his sons, because they're all part of his inheritance. So basically, Laban owns all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the kind of situation you have going on is that Jacob had his flocks he dealt with. The sons had their flocks. And so they're all part of Laban's property, but he just has different shepherds over different sheep. Does that make sense? All right, so they all get moved out. And so let's go down. Verse 36 says, "And he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob." So Laban took those sheep 3 days away. Why 3 days? No crossover. We don't want them coming anywhere in contact. Again, this is part of the plan. If I'm removing all the faulty sheep, then I'm not going to have any problems later on. They're all going to produce the same sheep, right? I think that's Laban's thinking. All right, so Jacob has a plan too. Now, we mentioned before, watch for notes of when you see kind of the mystic, idolatrous culture infecting the people, even God's people. Notice what happens next. "Then Jacob took fresh sticks of poplar and almond of poplar and almond and plane trees, and peeled white streaks in them, exposing the white of the sticks. He set the sticks that he had peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, that is, in the watering places where the flocks came to drink, since they bred when they came to drink. The flocks bred in front of the sticks, so the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted." You see here a little bit of the kind of mystic ideas of the day, these false ideas about how you can influence breeding. There is no scientific evidence that these sticks had anything to do, and we know that today. What has to do with breeding? DNA. It's all DNA, right? It's these sticks had no effect. Now, what you will see later, which is a positive, is what Jacob ultimately, when he ends up gaining in flocks, he attributes that to whom? To God. But here you kind of see a little bit of this kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of folklore, magical thinking folklore coming up even in Jacob. So he does that. That's not the only thing he does. The other thing he does in verse 40 is he takes this, he said he separated the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the striped. Maybe just willing it to happen. Maybe if I have them facing them, it's going to happen. Again, a little bit of a folklore going on here. So he did that. Ultimately, though, what was the outcome? One other thing before we get to there. Go to verse 41. Let's see. "Whenever the stronger of the flock were breeding, Jacob would lay the sticks in the trough." Right? So he put that with the stronger ones. However, verse 42, "But the feebler of the flock," what would he do? He didn't lay those sticks in there. Again, you see a little bit of his husbandry. He does have an understanding of genetics, even though he doesn't call it genetics. Because what is he doing? Yeah. Is that what you're going to say? Yeah, so he understands that. I'm going to move this right here because I keep hearing that jump. Sorry for those online. But he understands that stronger sheep typically produce stronger offspring. And so he, again, is showing his wisdom. This is wisdom, not magic. Verse 43. Thus the man, Jacob is who he's talking about, increased greatly and had large flocks, female servants and male servants, and camels and donkeys. Now, we don't know where the servants came from, but you do see something similar to what happened with Abraham and Isaac. God blessed them, and their wealth grew. And so he really saw a huge increase in his wealth.
Well, as his flocks increased, he would have to hire more servants or get more
servants
to
look after. Yeah, and I think the assumption is he would probably sell, right? He's doing, because again, how long has he been in service now? Well, we're going to find it out in a minute. But quite a while. It's not several years before he'll leave his service. But yeah, so he's building a business, and so that's how verse chapter 30 ends. Let's go to 31. So he's been in service to him, and so verse 1 says, "Now Jacob heard," this is key, "that the sons of Laban were saying, 'Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all this wealth.'" Jacob hears that. What are they saying? They're accusing him of what?
Stealing.
Is he stealing? This is not robbery. It's not robbery. He made a honest deal with Laban. Laban's sons just don't like the deal, neither does Laban. Now that they're losing. Now, if they had won out and Jacob just had a couple sheep, they wouldn't care. They would be happy. But since they're losing, the tables have turned. And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. Things have turned. Now, why is that? We don't know. Is it jealousy? Maybe. Is it envy and jealousy kind of same, right? Is it some other reason? Don't know for sure, but we know that the relationship has changed. Now, before those 14 years were up, Jacob had a real indebtedness to Laban. Laban had real power over him, didn't he? But now their relationship has changed. Now it's more of a partnership. And Laban is losing. Before, in those 14 years, Laban was gaining. And now that has changed. Then the Lord, now this another really key passage, verse 3. You might want to note verse 3 because this is really important. Then the Lord said to Jacob, when God starts saying something, listen. "Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you." So when God is saying, go home, it's time to go home. And so Jacob properly responds to this. Verse 4 says that he called Rachel and Leah together. They go out into a field. He relates kind of what's going on. I do want to note a couple of things here. He first mentions that Laban is not looking at him as he did before. Their relationship has changed. Verse 6, "You know that I served your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. Okay, so that 10 times is not, don't be exact with that. That's kind of it's just a symbolic way of saying it's happened a lot, right? He's done this a lot. How has he done it? He notes one change. Go to verse 8. If he, Laban, this is Jacob saying, this is what Laban said to me. If he said, the spotted shall be your wages, then all the flock bore spotted. If he said the striped, then all the flock bore striped. Thus God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. So I want you to note something there, kind of underlining I want to make sure there wasn't something else. Do you notice what Laban's doing? This isn't something he said outright, but it's something that we can know. What's Laban doing each time?
He's changing the agreement.
He's changing the agreement. The agreement was what? Any spotted, speckled, or black. Any of those. The striped would be included in that too. And yet now he's trying to say, no, that's not the deal. It's spotted. And so Laban has been trying to change the deal on him. But every time, how did God respond? Yeah. And it was always to the favor of Jacob. And so, verse 11, the angel of God said to me in a dream, Jacob. And I said, here am I. He said, lift up your eyes and see. All the goats that mate with a flock are striped, spotted, or molted. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. This is what God had said to Jacob. So God had even taken note of it. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and made a vow to me. Now rise and go from this land and return to the land of your kindred. And so he tells Rachel and Leah all this. Now, by saying God is blessing Jacob, what's ultimately happening to Rachel and Leah as a result of that? What are they losing? Well, they are losing relationship, but financially, they're losing their bridal price. Now, in that culture, the daughter who was to be married would receive a dowry from her father. This is money that he set aside for her well-being. This was basically her wealth. And what has Laban done? Notice Rachel and Leah's response, verse 14. They say, is there any portion or inheritance left to us in our father's house? Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and has indeed devoured our money. He made a bad deal. And not only is he paying for it, but so are they. All the wealth that God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do. Now, ultimately, God is blessing them, though, isn't he? As I'm pretty convinced that had this not happened and had their wealth stayed with Laban, they would not have possessed it because he would have never given it to them. God is essentially, I believe, protecting Leah and Rachel. Because who has their wealth now? Their husband, Jacob. And Jacob, of course, is going to bless them as well.
But Jacob had been following the customs of Laban, the Syrian customs, instead of his customs, his family. I mean, families were, daughters still merged. I mean, the families hadn't, he hadn't established a family of his own yet. I mean, they're still living with daddy.
So that's really important. And this is really significant when it comes to how this is kind of a conflict between the two cultures. Because as Jacob views it, who do Rachel and Leah and all those children, who they belong to? No, to Jacob. But Laban views them as belonging to who?
Him.
That he owns. That the daughters don't just belong to him, but all of their offspring belong to them. All of their wealth belongs to him. And so if God had not intervened, again, I think Laban kicks Jacob out and says, you're not getting anything. And then what does Jacob do? And he basically says that later on. We'll get there. So they say, do it. And, of course, then they devise this plan. I won't read all this, but they do leave. The text tells us that Laban, verse 22, had left on a three-day journey to go out to his other flocks. And that's when Jacob fled. And then Laban hears about it. and he comes chasing after him. It says it took him 7 days. He pursued him. Again, that seven, I don't know if that's an exact number or more of a symbolic number of a time period. Whether or not that's the case, it doesn't really matter. But I do want to notice God intervening. So verse 24, again, God intervenes, but God came to Laban Laban the Armenian, in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad." Now that either good or bad is probably more of the idea of don't you say anything negative to him. Don't you try to harm him in any way. And again, Laban knows how God has blessed Jacob. He's seen the power of God. And this is going to change probably how he reacts. But God says, do not harm him. And so Laban eventually, verse 25, overtook Jacob. Then I want to go down. So he catches up to him. Laban said to Jacob, now you'll notice who comes hot and heavy and then how it flips. All right, first it's Laban. He's hot and he's upset. He says, "What have you done that you have tricked me and driven away my daughters like captives of the sword?" What's he blaming him for here? Kidnapping. He says, "You've taken my daughters by the sword." Now, did he do that? No, the daughters went willingly, didn't they? He didn't kidnap them. Again, he's still their husband. They belong to him. But even in this situation, in this culture, he did not kidnap them. They went willingly. He said, "Why did you flee secretly and trick me and did not tell me so that I might have sent you away with mirth and songs with tambourine and lyre?" Does anybody believe for a second that was going to happen? But he is on a bluster right now, and he's going to continue. "Why did you not permit me to kiss," notice this, "my sons and my daughters farewell? Now you have done foolishly." And then the verse 29, "It is in my power to do you harm." That is all bluster. He has no power. And his next statement proves it. He's trying to save face, I believe. "But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful, do not say anything to Jacob, either good or bad.' And now you have gone away because you long greatly for your father's house. And why did you steal my gods?" We didn't read that yet, but anyway, he comes out all blustery. What about this God stuff? All right, again, an idolatrous people. If you back up.
Brother Brian, I need to clear up something in my mind. Why is Laban, I thought when a man get married.
Again, culture difference, right? We be careful not to view this from our cultural experience. In that culture, they did consider it. In Laban's culture, I don't think that's not in Abraham's culture, but I do believe in Laban's culture, the patriarch was he owned all, right? He is the one in complete power, like a king almost. He's a king over his domain. Does that make sense? No. Very different. And so he claims ownership over them. They do not belong to him. They do belong to Jacob. But that's the way he at least views it. Does that make sense? One more thing, and then I'll shut up. I know I'm out of time. One other thing I think is pretty important is if you go back. Oh, I had this right here. Verse 19. You're fine. Jacob. That's not right. Oh, I had it. Verse 19. "Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel stole her father's household gods." I don't have the Greek on there. I mean the Hebrew. I want to make sure I give you the right term. So these household gods were very significant, as you can probably tell from the text. They are, let me get over here. I just want to give you this, the term. Let's see. This is called a teraphim. Teraphim, that's the Hebrew. Teraphim were household gods. They were about that big. And they were unique to your house. Each house had its own god, if you will, in that Mesopotamian culture. And it, you could think of it kind of like a house insignia. You think about maybe from the Middle Age period, the coat of arms became very popular, and different houses have coat of arms, right? That was their house, and that was their insignia. Or maybe a king's signet ring, when he put that on the seal, that meant something very important. Well, these household gods represented the house. So, and I thought about this for a long time until I dug a little deeper. Why did she take that god? Well, I believe it's because of this. Having that god meant you were, it gave you right to inheritance. So that Laban could not simply push them aside and say, you have no right to your inheritance. She possessed that god. And that's why Laban is so indignant about the god. And that's why he's so desirous to get it back. And so I just want to mention that. If you, later he says, why have you taken my the god? Now, verse number 32 tells us Jacob did not know Rachel had done this. That's pretty significant as well. Laban goes, he searches. There's a kind of funny little scene. Rachel is sitting on the camel. She's on this kind of big seat. A palanquin seat, where it could be taken off the camel. It could be used as a chair, but it's a big kind of seat. She had put the god in there. Laban had searched all the tents. He couldn't find it. And she says, well, I can't get up. I'm having a bad time of the month, right? That's essentially what she says. And so he doesn't look there. And so he then is kind of shamefaced. Jacob responds, verse 36, in anger. And it says he berated Laban. And I am just simply out of time. I want to pick this up next week. We'll finish this out real quickly. But you do have verse 36 and forward is... Jacob just tears into Laban. And you almost feel this pent-up frustration that he has for all that's been done to him. And so we'll look at that next week. Again, thank you all for being here and spending this time with me in this study. I really enjoy these. I hope you get something out of it. We're going to close out our time this evening.